Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to the Michigan Man Podcast on Wolverine Sports Radio, a member of the VSporto Network, and in partnership with SB Nation's Maize and Brew, for Wolverine fans from coast to coast. Go Blue, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Mike Fitzpatrick. With us today discussing recruiting, the ongoing NCAA investigation, and much more will be Isaiah Hole from Wolverine's Wire. First, a few of my thoughts to get us going. The late signing date in February is not what it used to be. The early signing date in December has changed all that. Still, there are usually some very high-profile players that wait until February, and Michigan was in on a couple of those very high-level guys. We missed on Nicholas Harper, but flip four-star defensive lineman Cameron Brandt from Stanford. And I know a lot of you are disappointed the class ended up ranked 19th. Still, we signed some very high-level kids and others that could develop into contributors in the coming years. As Bo used to say when asked how good his class was, I have no idea. Ask me in 4 years. Now it's time to stay busy on the class of 24. There is no reason that we cannot put together a top 10 group based on the success of the last two seasons. The NCAA investigation drags on too. There were reports on Friday. Resolution might not come until the spring of next year. So what does that mean for Jim's new contract? No one seems to know. At any rate, in just a few weeks, spring football practice gets underway. And rest assured, even though it will be March, everyone's focus will shift to the next season of Michigan football. Joining me to discuss that and more on our game day segment is Isaiah Hole, who covers Michigan football for USA Today's Wolverines Wire. So stay with us. With us on the show this week is Isaiah Hole from Wolverines Wire. It's been a while, Isaiah, but it's great to have you back on the show with us.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure to join.
Well, it's, of course, been very busy as far as Michigan football goes in the news. The late signing period for college football was this week, and I guess the big news was we missed on five-star Nicholas Harper after seemingly being in the lead for him for quite some time. So were you surprised that he chose South Carolina?
Not particularly. I think that South Carolina probably offered a lot of what he was looking for, but I think that you look at a bunch of different things, and I don't think that it's necessarily as big of a loss for Michigan as, say, most five stars would be. But whereas he is an enigmatic talent and potentially a generational one, Michigan really foresaw him being more of a defensive player, particularly edge rusher. And it just did not seem like that's something he wants to do, considering he wants to stay lean for his and smaller. I mean, at 6'4", 225, I believe, is what he comes in at. He wanted to be able to continue to be about that size because track is seemingly his big passion above all else. And certainly South Carolina gives him the opportunity to train year-round outside for track. Michigan obviously has a great indoor track facility. But considering that he wasn't looking to make that switch to edge, like is what Michigan seemed to have envisioned him that being his potential role, and that he wants to remain an offensive guy, tight end, or which would probably would have forced him to bulk up or even that much more, or wide receiver, though he isn't necessarily known for his route running nor his hands. So I think that it kind of is what it is. I mean, you want a guy that has that type of talent, you know, regardless, but it didn't work out in from even a positional standpoint. And then NIL obviously became a factor. For the longest time, we had heard how NIL is not a factor for him, which made things really kind of stand out for Michigan, considering they're still seemingly getting things up and running after his commitment. Finally, at least the Learfield announcement happened, which makes it so that players can utilize the logos and things of that nature in their NIL merchandise. But at the same time, I mean, it eventually became a factor. And I think that's to be expected for any big-time recruit, because you can sit there and say it, that it's not going to be a factor, but other schools are going to jump into the fray and say, oh, it's not going to be a factor. Well, here's what we can do for you. And that's going to end up changing the way that things go. And that's going to be the unfortunate part of college football until Michigan finds a way to catch up in that light. So it's not surprising that NIL became a really big factor. I mean, he ended up hiring a marketing agency. So a lot of the things that Michigan thought they knew about Nicholas Harbor didn't end up actually being who he is, right? They saw him as an edge. He wants to play offense. NIL wasn't a factor. Now it is. Kind of more thought to be a humble, I mean, not saying he's not humble, but, you know, for the sake of saying it, was thought to be more of a humble academic type, and doesn't pick the academic school, goes for a little bit more of the flash and all of that kind of stuff, and seems to want more personal attention than being a team guy, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just he's not what Michigan really thought that they were going to get in him, because circumstances change, and it's fine. That's the nature of recruiting and even just the sport in general. While it is a blow that they weren't able to get him, and I think more so from an optics standpoint than anything, it isn't, I don't think, a blow for the team itself. It's just from an optics standpoint, it kind of hurts, because they thought that they were going to get a five-star, would certainly have made the class look better, given just that it's ranked 19th in the country. It's not an ideal situation, but it's not exactly the end of the world either.
No, he would have been a nice pickup, but on National Signing Day, there was good news. Michigan flipping three-star Cameron Brandt from Stanford. There was some talk about that for the last couple of weeks, and he looks like even though there was only one addition on National Signing Day, he looks like a good pickup, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then 24/7 Sports even has him ranked as a four-star on their proprietary rankings, I believe. So he's no slouch, and I think those are the types of guys that Michigan's done really well with, is especially on defense, is bringing in those guys that are kind of tweeners, that are certainly thought well of in the recruiting circles, but not necessarily the high-level guys. And it's at an important position, too, because you have to remember, defensive line was essentially a position that went a couple cycles without bringing anybody in. And they started to finally kind of bring some guys in 2021, I believe. And, you know, you only got two of the three left since George Rooks opted to transfer. But they had a long stretch where they weren't really cultivating depth there. So the fact that they were able to get three guys in this class, Brooks Barr, who I think you look at as maybe a little bit more of a developmental guy, Trey Pierce, probably a little bit less so, but probably a year, maybe two away from contributing. And you get another guy in Cameron Brandt that has that same type of opportunity ahead of him. So it's good because especially, you know, they bring Chris Jenkins back. You figure this is absolutely going to be his last year with the program. You've got some other guys that are up and coming, whether it's Rayshon Benny, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant. We still want to see what Ike Iwuna can do. He's obviously of that class with Rayshon Benny and formerly George Brooks. They still don't have quite as much depth there as you would hope. So to get a third guy that can come in and make a difference like him down the road, I mean, that is absolutely huge for Michigan.
Well, I think it's safe to say with the class of 23 wrapped up, Michigan has to notch it up with the class of 24. And this has to be, or should be, at least a top 10 class. Or that should be the goal, shouldn't it, Isaiah?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? That's why I'm not that down on 23. Because as long as you are surrounding a more lackluster class with, you know, more highly thought of classes, then it's kind of fine. we saw that with 2018, and 2018 ended up being much better than 2017 or 2019, I believe. So far, they've got six commits, and five of them are four stars. That's already better than what they brought in 2023. So that's already a really good sign. Now, you need to get some higher-end talent, because all of those four stars are outside of the top 100. So you need a couple guys that are going to be more blue chip, obvious difference makers. And they don't quite have that yet, though. I really like this latest pickup of Jacob Oden. If I would have still had a 24/7 sports crystal ball, which, you know, I left the company in 2018, I would have picked Jacob Oden back in 2021 before he even got his Michigan offer to go to Michigan. So that was no surprise, but he's a guy that trained with, he was training with Will Johnson at Sound Mind, Sound Body, and was thought of as being one of the better defensive backs in that group. And there tends to be a couple really good defensive backs that come out of that camp. So that was really good. And then you've got a bunch of other guys that look like they can be really good. I'm pretty excited about Mason Curtis, the linebacker from Tennessee. He'd been the pinnacle of the class before Jacob Oden signed on yesterday, or at least verbally pledged. But you've got a couple other guys that really can be difference makers. Luke Hamilton and Ted Hammond out of Ohio. No, neither of them have Ohio State offers. I would think with their stature that will eventually come. The fact that they are starting to really attack the state of Ohio is an interesting development. So it'll be interesting to see how some of these guys come along. The only one that isn't a four-star, and he's not even really ranked, is Manuel Beagle. He comes over from overseas. He's a guy that wasn't exactly going to be really evaluated because he came from overseas. And then now he's at a school that isn't necessarily going to be heavily evaluated. So Michigan offered him pretty early. He committed really early. So I think that will bode really well for them. They just got to have to keep their nose to the grindstone. And you see some of these guys like Jordan Marshall, the running back out of Cincinnati, Taylor Tatum from Texas, the two four-star running backs. I think getting a guy, if not, you know, one or both, would be imperative, considering I can't imagine that they're going to have Blake Corbin, Donovan Edwards after this year. Maybe Donovan Edwards sticks around for another year. Blake Corbin would have another year of eligibility, but it would be really difficult to see him stick around for another year. So getting a couple of high-end position players there, then obviously the quarterback is of key importance. They've been trying to lure Jaden Davis for the longest time. He keeps pushing back his commitment. That's not a great sign, but as many recruiting insiders say, like, there's really no other spot for him. Ohio State's starting to push, and Michigan's starting to look around a little bit too. Jim Harbaugh went and visited Dylan Raiola, mm-hmm. Son of Dominic Raiola, the longtime Detroit Lions center, thought to be going to either Georgia or Nebraska, formerly committed to Ohio State. There's certainly other options out there if they decide to push relatively early, Michael Van Buren being one of them. But I think all eggs are still kind of in that Jaden Davis basket. It will certainly help with Channing Goodwin being a high school teammate, son of Jonathan Goodwin. Wide receiver, he's a three-star, but certainly has the size already that you're looking for out of a wide receiver. And there's a couple other guys out there that really could help make this class. And this one just seems like it's going to probably be, unlike this last year where it was four stars and then the rest were three stars, this one feels like this is going to be more four-star leading. It doesn't seem like they're going to be settling nearly as much. They've really put down the foundation. I think this is where you start to have the back-to-back Big Ten championships and college football playoff appearances start to really kind of pay off, because as much as you look at that and you say, well, that should have paid dividends in 2023, I think the foundations were already kind of laid from other schools for a lot of those prospects. NIL certainly kind of changed the game as well. So this is the year where I think you can kind of point to that. And Michigan's going to be thought of by some of these younger recruits as being a powerhouse. They're going to think about seeing them beating Ohio State. They're going to think about them going and playing in the college football playoff. You could be one of the ones that helps us really establish this thing as a long-term dynasty, because it takes a little bit of time. And I know it's Jim Harbaugh's been here for 8 years, going on nine and everything like that. But with what kind of happened at the middle of his tenure, it kind of forced a hard reset. And I always point to Clemson, and people hate when I point to Clemson, but it was very similar to deal in with Clemson, right? Because Dabo took about 4 or 5 years before he really got the Tigers over the hump. And their recruiting tended to be in the teens until they started winning national championships. And even once they started winning national championships and started bringing in, you know, the number one, the number, you know, number two, number three type classes, that's kind of when they stopped being able to win national championships, actually. So the most important thing for Michigan in 2024 here is to continue to round out with more high-level pieces that can, you absolutely have to go get a quarterback. Maybe even as dire as it was once upon a time, thanks to the transfer portal, because now you can essentially go out and get a modern five-star in the sense of he wasn't a five-star as a recruit. He might have that ability and is looking for greener pastures. You know, you look at a Spencer Sanders this year, for instance, or, you know, and say, well, that guy can really play. Whereas maybe like a DJ Uiagalelei was a five-star as a recruit. He's maybe more of a 3.5, four-star. But you'd have that opportunity, and certainly if Michigan can continue to have success this year, which many point to being a likelihood given the talent that's coming back, you have that ability to really, and we saw Michigan take advantage of the transfer portal this last offseason to do exactly that. And you figure, yeah, they brought in some guys like Ladarius Henderson who maybe weren't like a four-star or five-star as a recruit, but certainly has that type of capability now that we've seen what they're able to do in college. And they've added it to this past class. They can do the same with 2024 and 2025, especially if they don't put all the pieces they want. I obviously think that, you know, you build through, it's better to build through recruiting, much like in the NFL, it's better to build through the draft. And then you get your free agent pieces to help kind of flesh that out. And I think that's kind of where Michigan's at right now.
There's so much going on other than recruiting right now. The NCAA investigation is one thing that, you know, sort of drives me nuts. It's not wrapped up and it can drag on for years before any kind of a finality. What are your thoughts on this whole investigation?
Well, it seems like Michigan still seems to think that it's going to wrap up sooner than later since Jim Harbaugh has not signed a contract, or but I don't think he's officially been offered one. And the plan is for once this is wrapped up that he'll get that. I don't know that they're going to let that go more than this offseason. I mean, I believe that the NIL, the big announcement with the talent agency getting involved, I believe that that's going to come around that same time. But I do think it's a farce, right? And I like some of the analogies that we've seen some of the people in college football media really kind of put forth about it, you know, just how it's just pulling a guy over for going, you know, this is Josh Pate from his show saying that it's like the police pulling a guy over for going 72 and a 65. Well, got a bunch of crotch rockets speeding by at 100. That really is kind of what it is, because NIL in the spirit of it, it is not supposed to be pay for play. And we see that it clearly is being used as pay for play. And right now the NCAA is focused on a head coach taking out two committed recruits out for hamburgers during a dead period after they arrived on campus of their own volition. Like, that's really stretching it, right? Like, I don't think there's anyone other than Michigan State and Ohio State fans that are looking at that. I don't even think the Ohio State fans are. They recognize Catgate kind of happening all over again. I think that they're looking at that and saying, that is absurd, because there are certainly schools out there that are openly and blatantly cheating, and you have something this minor, and that's become an issue. And I understand it's because Harbaugh wasn't forthcoming with that information, and then they found it out and whatever. But again, this is such a minor situation. Now, I understand with Michigan, leaders invest, all of that. You want to be above the fray. People were really upset when Practice Gate happened under Rich Rod, but had also a similar response, right? People were mad at Rich Rod for the first ever NCAA violations that happened, but they also saw it for the farce that it is. I think that Michigan should continue to be bold and obfuscate the way that they have, because the NCAA is toothless, and it doesn't. They don't really give any answers. And I mean, now they have this new essentially bill that they passed where teams can be reported just by, you know, it's not simple as it something being printed in a news story, like, you know, we would print. I mean, heck, we've inadvertently at times printing stuff that ended up would have been secondary violations or whatever. And is the NCAA really going to get to that point where suddenly they're acting like the strong arm of the law after being so hands off for so long? And then on top of that, they're going after petty crimes and misdemeanors when there's clear high felonies being committed. It's unbelievable. They've been ignoring obvious abuses of their system for years, for decades. I mean, everyone knows what the Bagman is, and yet this is where they're honing in on. It's absolutely absurd. Just as absurd as, I mean, I know one of the violations was about Ryan Osborne coaching players. That's something similar with Nebraska last year with having an analyst coaching special teams. Like, what are we doing here? You know, these aren't things that are helpful to the actual players, right? It's like coaches coaching. That's what you're going to really, you know, get caught up on. Like, well, that coach was coaching and he was supposed to be more helping the coaches. Okay, great. I mean, in any real life scenario, that's not even a problem. And I'm a little more intense with the Nebraska accusation and all of that than I am the Michigan one, because I mean, that's not the wrong thing to do, to have coaches coach. There needs to be a change. Clearly, they don't have any kind of control over NIL. And you know what? If you're going to try to establish the letter of the law, why don't you start with the felonies that are being committed other than the misdemeanors, the things that really deserve just a slap on the wrist here.
I agree, and I think most college football fans do. So hopefully this thing gets wrapped up very soon. And let's circle back to NIL for just a minute or two, Isaiah. And I know, I'm sure from your readers and my listeners, it's something we get a lot of email about, wanting to know what's going on. And we do know that Valiant's done a really good job in the last year, and now we have that Learfield partnership. We have heard in the last few months there is more coming. Stay tuned. But nothing really has happened yet. Have you heard anything as far as more news goes on the NIL front?
They're still working on it. I believe that's going to be announced, like I said earlier, with at the same time that Jim Harbaugh's contract would be announced. So I think that the NCAA is kind of the hold up here. To my belief, but I'm not 100 on this, but what's really going to help establish like the base salary? It's not going to be pay for play. They're not going to go that route ever. That's just not what Michigan's going to do. But it will at least be something better than this transformational over transactional, because you can sit there and say we are being pious, we are being high and mighty here, but if everyone else around you is doing the well, we're going to be transactional and we can also be transformational, that's going to resonate more with younger guys. Because why wouldn't you, if you were out there in the job market and there are multiple companies that all do the same thing that you want, right? That you're looking for. You have all these different offers, job offers out there available to you. One might be the best. It really, you know, it might give you the best of in the mission statement that you are looking for. It might be the absolute best. You know, they might have all the amenities and different job perks that you're looking for. But every other one out there is saying, we will give you something that is very, very close to that. And we're also going to give you a bunch more money. I mean, which one are you going to pick? You know, sometimes there is a heart and soul, argument against just the full on monetary. But when you're weighing the pros and cons, I mean, it's going to be awfully enticing to want to go to a place that maybe doesn't have as good of academics. But you know what? Maybe you're making six figures, possibly seven figures in the meantime while you're preparing for the NFL. And so I think that Michigan they're being smart about what they're doing, but I think that they need to find a way to be smarter and a little bit more ruthless, because it's going to be really hard to compete. And I think we saw that even this last cycle, just the Big Ten in general compared to all of these other conferences. Big Ten only brought in one five-star this entire cycle. One, and went to Ohio State. Brandon Innes, the wide receiver. That's pretty rare, because usually, you know, you see Ohio State get its four or five five-stars. Penn State and Michigan usually, I would say, probably average one five-star, maybe two a cycle. And then every now and again you get, you know, Michigan State or Wisconsin or Maryland will end up reeling in a five-star. Iowa's not immune to that either. I'd say the refs probably aren't going to get that, but that tends to be the case. And then those guys aren't going there. They're going to the SEC. They're going to the Pac-12. It's incumbent upon, I'd say, the breadth of the Big Ten to kind of adapt or die, because the Big Ten being number two in the country as far as conferences, they're going to get left behind, especially when you see a South Carolina really starting to have better recruiting classes. Maybe not overall. It's not better overall. It doesn't rank as high as Ohio State, but maybe has a little bit more flash than that. Then those types of schools are going to be able to catch up that much faster. And things, the landscape could potentially see the same kind of tectonic shift we saw it take after Ohio State lost back-to-back to SEC schools in the late aughts. So the Big Ten in general needs to catch up. Michigan certainly needs to catch up, because you can rely so heavily on development, but some guys are just going to supersede that. So NIL, I think that it's good that they've got this deal they're working on. I'll be interested to see what that yields and if that has any positive effect, but I'm sure it will. But they need to get this done sooner than later if they really want to continue to be on the grand stage.
Well, what I think is a positive is President Santa Ono has made a really good impression in a very, very short amount of time, and it is too early to tell, but it sure looks like he could be the right man at the right time for Michigan athletics and NIL moving forward, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, after, you know, I might just be using this term because I've been deep in reading my Bible lately, but after wandering in the desert under Mark Schlissel, that's actually a terrible analogy. Schlissel, I can tell you a personal anecdote here. I was still very much just a Michigan fan. I was not working in the industry at all. And I was trying to break into the industry. So I was really heavily involved in the Alumni Association. And they had a meet and greet with Schlissel right after he was hired in 2014. He wasn't even officially on as the school president. And this happened to be the week that this was like on a Tuesday. So this was after all of the Shane Morris concussion stuff happened. That it was literally that week. So I walk into the Book Cadillac Hotel in Detroit. I'm walking through the hallways. They got TVs in the hallways. They're all tuned to ESPN, and they're all showing Michigan and replaying the Shane Morris concussion incident. This is, I believe, the day after Dave Brandon put out his awful, you know, in the middle of the night statement about all of that. So I was the first person that got to talk to Schlissel after he arrived. And the first thing out of my mouth, obviously, is what are you going to do about this Dave Brandon, Brady Hoke, Shane Morris incident? And he scoffed at me. He was like, "You don't want to talk about academics?" I'm like, "No." And I guarantee no one else here does. Like, that's not what Michigan is. Like, yes, we care. If we who have degrees from Michigan care about the upholding of our esteemed academics, in as much that we want to have that sense of superiority that we have. What we really care about just as much is this football program, more above all else. And he did not want to hear a word of what I had to say. And I'm sure that was all he heard about from everyone. Like, all these people at the Alumni Association that I knew cared deeply about football. That's all we talked about, was football. We didn't talk about, like, oh yeah, the chem, you know, being in the chem building and the, you know, the wonderful amenities that the campus buildings have, or, you know, the LSNA program is just, you know, it's really starting to come up. Or let's talk about the higher end. Let's talk about the engineering school or anything like that. No, we didn't. That was back of mind. Santa Ono comes along and he gets it, right? Because I've seen Santa Ono, granted, all I had to do was see him once. I've seen Santa Ono at more football games then I saw Mark Schlissel. Yeah. All I had to do was see him once. I've seen him on the sidelines at least three times, if not more. And so that shows how much he is into it, right? Like, and he's a man of the people too. That's like, you see him, like, he's going around taking pictures with people. He's interacting with the student section and things of that nature. He understands that the university is the front door, or the football program is the front door of the university. He understands that. It's how Michigan could have a president that just did not care about a program. I don't even care personally to talk about all of the other athletics. How he did not even bother to care. Now at least you have San Ono, who essentially, I would say, he's doing the bare minimum. But that's fine. That's all Michigan really needs, is someone that recognizes what it has and says, I care about that. Let's make sure that that is doing well. Let's make sure it has all the resources it needs. And that's what Santa Ono is at least doing. And I'd say he's probably going above and beyond that. But that's really the bare minimum, is looking at the football program, the cash cow of the athletic department, and saying, what do you need? And I'm going to make sure that we get that. So it's unbelievable that it took to this point before that happened. But that's a step in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely it is. Well, Isaiah, we're just really a few weeks away from spring practice. As hard as it is to believe, I think we're taping on Friday morning, and the athletic department announced the date of the spring game. So focus is going to start shifting towards next season. Losing to TCU in the playoffs is still right there in our memories. It was disappointing. But if Michigan can win the Big Ten for a third year in a row, and that's a big if, I know, it's a tough schedule. Do you think they finally have the talent, and then being back for maybe a third trip to the playoffs, to maybe compete head-to-head with the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world?
I think yes, and I think that they would have been able to this year if they would have been smart about that TCU game. And I think the big reason is why is because you have a quarterback that can make or break the team. Now, we saw him do literally both in the Fiesta Bowl. Before he almost made the game, he broke the game by throwing two pick sixes. But J.J. McCarthy was starting to kind of come alive before our very eyes in the last couple games of the season, including the Fiesta Bowl. Had he not made those two picks, that game would have been completely different. But Michigan wouldn't have been in that game likewise if it wasn't for J.J. McCarthy battling back. You look at any national championship winning team in the last however long, every one of those teams has had that. And I know people weren't necessarily thinking that of Stetson Bennett, but I mean, he's been amazing. You know, he's been absolutely phenomenal for Georgia, and people were still kind of thinking of him as a walk-on, but you think about some of those passes he made against Michigan even, we hadn't seen that type of quarterback play from a Michigan quarterback until really this last year with J.J. McCarthy coming in. I mean, he was wheeling and dealing. So I think that that's the most important thing. Now, can they win a national championship game again? I'll say Georgia, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that they would have been in that game. I don't think it would have been what TCU put forth. Because I think Michigan has more overall. I think that TCU just happened to match up really well against Michigan, mixed with some really bad play / coaching decisions by Michigan. So I think that Michigan's going to have to overcome itself if it does get that far, because it is pretty glaring that they did lose a game that they really should have won, and probably would have won 8 out of 10 if they played TCU 10 times. But I think it starts with the quarterback. And I think that when you have a really good running back and offensive line, which Michigan has both, and they have two really good running backs, I think that that gives you a chance. And then I think the question will be defensively, are you going to be able to stop a high-powered offense if you see one again? Because that was obviously an issue that happened with TCU. I mean, they warned us. I thought that they had hubris by doing that, but they backed it up. If you give up 51 points, you're probably not going to win that game.
No.
And I know that 14 of those 51 went against the offense, but they made big plays when they needed to make them. We know that the defense can stall a high-powered offense. We saw them do it to Ohio State 2 years in a row. And Ohio State Michigan had a better track record against Ohio State compared to Georgia against Ohio State. Georgia couldn't really stop Ohio State, but yet Michigan could. So we need to see more consistency there. I think Jesse Minter being in his second year will be good. They've lost playmakers, of course, but I like pretty much everyone that's coming in. I think the only question is who's going to be that guy opposite Will Johnson. Is Jade McBurrows finally, we're going to be able to see him? I mean, they've talked really high of him since he arrived as a freshman. So is it him, or do they bring in a guy via the transfer portal? That's going to be the question. But I think you look at every level on the defense, and I don't see any reason why it can't be as good, if not better, than it was last year. Yeah, you lose Ozzie Smith, but you started to see not only Mason Graham, but Rashawn Benny really step things up as the year went on. Edge rusher, I do have questions about, but they still have a lot of bodies that can do. You know, how does Derek Moore step things up? Jalen Harrell, after having a year finally being kind of the guy, him along with Braden McGregor, how does he improve? The linebacking core returns intact, and then they add Ernest Hausman. How does he help this group? Does the rotation go a little bit deeper as a result? You bring back all three guys that were thought as starting safety, and then you also have your returning nickelback and Mike Sainristil, who played like a seasoned vet, even though it was his first year playing the position. Will Johnson was rated by PFF as one of the top cornerbacks in the country. And it was in his freshman year. I mean, he had an opportunity to really be that next, not just great Michigan cornerback, but one that we talk about for a generation. So I like what they have. It's just a matter of filling in a couple of those little gaps, you know, the defensive end, you know, losing Morris and Nyabi Oki, Josiah Scott, the transfer from Coastal Carolina. He ended up being that big difference maker. I mean, he's rated pretty highly. So you add him to the mix. These other guys take a step forward. Does the linebacking core stay the same? Does it get better? Does the rotation seem a little bit deeper? All of these things kind of mix together. It makes you think that the defense could take a step forward. Offensively, I have no doubt that it will take a step forward. I'm always looking at the quarterback position and saying, even though we've seen guys like C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young really be very good in two. I think J.J. McCarthy had some training wheels on regardless, just because of his wheeling and dealing mindset. But usually when guys get to year three is when they take a big step forward. You have a lot going for you on both sides of the ball.
As we've heard here in the last half hour or so, there's a lot going on here in the off season. As we mentioned just a minute ago, spring practice is right around the corner, and we'll start focusing on the upcoming season. But our guest today has been Isaiah Hole from Wolverine Wire. Isaiah, always great to have you on the show. We appreciate you taking so much time with us, and we look forward to that next visit.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
On Quick Hits today, Juwan Howard and his team picked up a huge road win over Northwestern Thursday night, 68-51. If we have any hope of making it to the big dance, we need to get hot. It can happen. John Beilein's team seemed to always get better in February and March, so it is possible. This is a young team and they have the talent, but they need to be much more consistent and hungry. Number 18 Michigan women's basketball also picked up a big 74-57 road win over Illinois on Thursday. They are 18-5 overall, 8-4 in the Big Ten. They'll travel to East Lansing on Sunday for a matchup with the Spartans. Hockey is at home this weekend to Wisconsin. They are 16-9-1 heading into the action. That will do it for another show. Make sure you tell your family and friends about us and tune in again next week. Have a great Wolverine weekend, everyone. I'm your host, Mike Fitzpatrick. Until we meet again, take care, and as always, go blue. Thanks for joining us today on The Michigan Man, here on Wolverine Sports Radio, a member of the VSporto Network, and in partnership with SB Nation's Maize and Brew. Our listener lines are open 24/7 for your calls at 313-263-4842. That's 313-263-4842. Or email us at themichiganmanpodcast@yahoo.com. That's themichiganmanpodcast@yahoo.com. The Michigan Man Podcast is produced at the studios of Robin Lynn Productions, Allen Park, Michigan, and is not affiliated with the University of Michigan. Go Blue!